Declaration. Louisiana is a state where as long as you're off probation and have completed your sentencing, you can vote. A lot of people don't know that, and I've had personal connections with that and helping family members get re-registered to vote once they've met those stipulations.
And Daryl, you know, I'm looking at an ABA report on people with disabilities, and it's not as easy as people think. They think, oh, well, if it's a wheelchair, probably we just made it better, make sure we have a ramp. But listen to this. One reason for the lower turnout is barriers to the ballot box. Imagine using a wheelchair or walker and not being able to enter your polling place because there was no ramp. The doors were too narrow, hard to open, and lacked automatic openers, or the pathway to the voting area was obstructed and lacked proper signage. Having a vision impairment and encountering a voting machine that did not offer audio or large print ballots, or poll workers who were not trained to set up these features or troubleshoot malfunctions and failed to provide instructions on how to use the machine, or having an intellectual or cognitive disability and being denied the right to vote by state law that reflects incorrect assumptions about your capabilities. One in every six Americans has a disability. And it's estimated that millions, we're not talking about 2 million, we're not talking about 3 million, not 4 million, not 5 million, not 8 million. Americans aren't able to vote even though they are full citizens, work, live, pay taxes, do everything else in this country, but are not able to vote because we don't have a proper system to engage them, and we allow these barriers to exist. We're going to have Mr. Jones come on and do a show, right, Daryl?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And you know, Barbara, you know, Gisella, one of the things that was really interesting that just really blew my mind. It didn't come from a panelist, Barbara. Gisella, it came from one of the Gen Zs, one of the young millennials who asked the question and made the statement that for those people who don't think that those with disabilities, those that are physically challenged to be able to vote, don't think it applies to them, that you're only one misstep, one accident, one action away from being disabled yourself and now learning the world of the disability. And this was the reason why everyone should lift up and try to protect and level the playing ground and make accessible voting and as much other stuff as possible for those in the disability community. Giselle, do you remember that moment? And if you do, how did it make you feel?
Yes, I definitely agree with what was said, especially by, as you mentioned, Daryl, a Gen Z peer. And at that same time, it's the example that was also mentioned in the conference, that though you believe your vote is just one single vote, it is power enough to be able to tip that scale, and it has much more of an impact than what many believe. So that's why that's a right that should not be suppressed in any way for anyone.
I wanted to follow up, Daryl. So the unhoused situation was very poignant because the new legislation that's being proposed as we talk in Arizona would block the use of governmental or any buildings that you don't reside in as a registration place. So if you live in a car, if you house surf, go from one home to the other, if you don't have a permanent address and you were using, as many states allow you to do, a federal, state, local, community center, area where you vote, even intersections can be used, they would ban this. And this is a problem for the unhoused because it affects a lot of people. So, folks, let's keep our eyes and ears open. They're trying to do everything they can to eliminate voters. And we also talked about race, the racial dynamics, the targeting of Black, Brown, Latino, and and Native American and Asian voters, the purposeful targeting of them to make sure that they can't vote. And I want to hear from our guests what they felt, what did they learn differently about the racial context. And Vigilante, kicked that off. It also came up in the presentation that I did on white structural racism and in many of the panels where people talked about the systemic racism, especially against Blacks and Native Americans. Yes, Angel, you want to talk about that aspect of the training?
Yes, ma'am. I really enjoyed your panel on structural racism. I learned about the inculcation, meaning that it's the natural order of things, you don't challenge it. So things that go on, we feel like, well, that's just America. That's what we get because we're Black. We don't deserve this treatment, but that's just the way it is. And people don't go any further than that. I enjoyed learning about the doctrine of discovery. That was a very defining moment in the training for me because you guys listed Supreme Court cases and decisions that I just had never heard of, and I need to know these things to take them back to my community, and I really appreciate that.
Thank you. You know what's so fascinating? Daryl will tell you that when we were in law school, we didn't learn that in law school, right, Daryl?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Not at all. Those cases weren't taught to us. Not at all. I mean, this is all learning that we've had to do, post-law school. And then we had the issue of the banned books, right, everybody? We're in talking about territory where people don't want Black history, Mexican-American history taught. I don't think that it was addressed during the training, but we want people to know that a number of years ago, there was a national movement to move the NFL's game away from Arizona because they were banning the teaching of Mexican-American history. And that was a powerful movement. It taught Arizona a lot that you can lose great money if you actually tried to ban instructions. How did that play out in your mind as you were giving away books to anyone on the panel?
I can answer that question. So I feel like starting off with the books that we were giving away, one of them was Rainbow Fish that I grew up reading, especially like in both languages, in Spanish as well. And it was just sort of like I couldn't wrap my mind around the fact that this book had been banned just because the fish was different. And that to me was just so shocking. And also explaining to people that were passing by with the books that books such as Animal Farm, such as 1984, they were all
mm-hmm.
Yes. So it was significant books, especially those that represent history of communities of color, and all of these books, they were also banned. And it just shows that basically what happened in 1984 is just being repeated now. And it's just sort of scary to think of it that way.
Right. Orwell's book, 1984, banned in almost all these book banning jurisdictions. And as we pointed out, it's banned because it teaches you how to recognize fascism and how to recognize suppression of thought and how to critically think. Daryl, back to you.
Yeah, and Angel, one of the things that this training was designed to do was to force people that are really activists from around the country to come together, to learn of one another, to network with one another, and to be able to walk away meeting new people and having new plans, new ideas on how they can implement their plans in their community. Did you feel as though the group leader concept, the networking concept, did all of that come through for you? And you know, so now you're back home. Are you ready to implement some things that you've learned from the usage of that concept?
I am absolutely fired up and ready to go. the networking has been, it was amazing. Esquire, Shannon, and her expertise, my team leader, Adrian Continetti Jr., and his leadership was amazing. And even just the people in my group, I came with Black Voters Matter, so our cohort and how we seamlessly integrated with the TJC cohort as well. Thank you guys for that as well. But I had an amazing time. I am ready to implement. I'm ready to teach and power map and all those great things.
and Daryl, it was fascinating that we were able to register people to vote at the community engagement. And one of the things that we hope is that a lot of our trainees who attended will, in fact, help register more people to vote, will help, as we did at the training, those who are formerly incarcerated to learn about their rights to vote and how to restore their vote, and for people to check their voter registration. And we re-registered people who had moved and needed to re-register. There was so much going on, but it's a reminder that there's so much to do, right? There's so much to do. So, Reverend, you know, Chauncey, how will that change the work you do? Will it make you do more voter registration? Will it make you do it differently?
Absolutely. Well, we were, I believe, at the Zion Institute and had an opportunity to speak to so many people and register those, our friends and family, to vote. It highlighted what I have to do when I came back home. Okay.
Uh-oh.
We have coalition. We're sitting in the room with all of our Gen Z and millennials. There's at least 30 organizations represented in the room, if not more. And it automatically made me spur the thought of, how do we do this together? How do we fight for voting rights together? And I believe the concept that both you and Attorney Jones have, you train coalition that will be coalition. And then all we have to do what you've trained us to do. And so specifically in my context, when it comes to voter registration, it's so essential. We're seeing it more and more in elections, how one vote counts, how two votes count. Even here, our attorney general elections, no, our state, our prosecutor, I'm sorry, prosecutor's election was so close. It was like 4,000 votes.
Wow.
And when we look at all that are unregistered, we could swing a vote either way if we just register people to vote. So giving people their voice, recognizing that they do have a voice, recognizing that their one vote does count, really want to start a movement of the importance of one vote. Because I think we think in large numbers so much that we forget, hey, one voice, one vote can make a difference.
And, you know, Sadija, one of the things that one of the panels that we focus on is on community organizing as well as campus organizing and really the interrelationship of associations. And, you know, you are one of the liberators that came through the Black Voters Matters training. And, you know, we've always said, we've always tried to talk about how there is no light, no sunlight, no daylight, no space between Black Voters Matter and the Transformative Justice Coalition, that we have each other's back as we go through it. Did you see that on display at this training?
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely something to see, but also something to note for everybody that we can't do it without each other and utilizing our resources and pooling together to make sure that we have as good of a turnout for everything and, you know, that we participate in. So definitely.
And let me go. Also, I want to, Giselda, you know, you, I noticed this morning, I saw it last night. Sounds like you Floridians are organizing. And that people who attended from Florida are already connecting and talking about how to work together. Am I right? I think I've seen some things flashing across my screen.
Absolutely.